Blog Talk Radio.
Now.
This is an article about Frank Little by Rory Carroll in Butte, Montana, featured in The Guardian on Wednesday, the 21st of September, 2016, 7 o'clock edition. This is Carl G. reading the article. The mysterious lynching of Frank Little, activist who fought inequality and lost. The hobo agitator was killed in Montana in 1917. A century later, the question remains, who killed him? And did it help pave the way for Donald Trump? The murders parked in front of 316 North Wyoming Street shortly after 3 a.m. One stayed by the car while the others, six of them, all masked, entered the boarding house. They roused the owner, a woman named Nora Byrne. "We want Frank Little," they said. Terrified, she directed them to room 32. They kicked in the door. Their quarry, a slender, dark-haired man, who had been sleeping. They hauled him out in his underwear, giving him no time to dress or grab his crutches, and bundled him in the car. They drove a short distance, stopped, tied him to a rear bumper, dragged him over the street's granite blocks. Out on Milwaukee Bridge, just outside of town, they beat him. Then they attached a rope to a railway trestle and strung him up. Cause of death, strangulation by hanging, said the coroner report. So ended the short, eventful life of Frank Little, labor leader, strike organizer, and anti-war protester in Butte, Montana, on August 1, 1917. A crippled, one-eyed, itinerant activist, he took on a giant corporation and the U.S. government and lost. A century later, the mystery remains. Who killed Frank Little? The murderers were never identified. There are other puzzles. Was Dashiell Hammett, author of The Maltese Falcon, involved? What did the number 3777 pinned to Little's body mean? As the U.S. lurches towards the most toxic president election in living memory, perhaps the most intriguing question in this, did the lynching help pave the way for Donald Trump? That is a heavy historical load for an all-forgotten figure. In Butte, there is no statue or street named in Little's memory, not even a mention of him at the town's World Museum of Mining, just a few miles from the scene of his kidnapping. He lies in a pauper's section in the Mountain View Cemetery. In American history, he's barely a footnote, said Arnold Steed, author of a recent book on Little. If you're not reading someone like Howard Zinn, you're not going to come across Frank Little at all. Bernie Sanders or Occupied supporters never heard of Little. Yet a thread links his lynching to current battles over inequality, labor, mobilization, and blue-collar representation. The history of labor in America and the fight for recognition was much bloodier than Europe's, said Aaron Gutfeld. The history of labor in America and the fight for recognition was much bloodier than Europe's, said Aaron Gutfeld, a historian who worked in Montana's mines and investigated Little's murder. Violence is as American as cherry pie. Frank Little grew up in the twilight of the Gilded Age. Corporate titans known as robber barons amassed fortunes on the backs of workers who toiled for meager pay in difficult conditions. Grand mansions coexisted with homeless camps known as hobo jungles. Little, the son of a Quaker, and according to Steed, part Cherokee, is thought to have been born in Oklahoma in 1879. After a stint as a miner, he joined the Industrial Workers of the World, a radical labor union known as the Wobblies. The nickname origin is unclear, but the organization's goal gleamed bright, a revolution to let workers in fields, farms, and mines keep what they produced. The IWW leaders and intellectuals, socialists, anarchists, Marxists, were based in Chicago, but Little crisscrossed hamlets, towns, and cities in western states, agitating, recruiting, and evangelizing with little more than the clothes on his back, oratorical power, and a fearless bordering on suicidal. Frank Little preached to fruit pickers, lumberjacks, oil drillers, and miners, urging them to strike for better pay and conditions, and if necessary, to impede, to sabotage production. He drew crowds by standing on street corners reading the Declaration of Independence. He appealed not just to white working men, but women, blacks, Latinos, hobos, insisting they had common cause. Business owners hated and feared Frank Little. Newspapers denounced him and police jailed him. When that didn't work, the bosses hired thugs to beat him up, but that didn't work either. Little was a hobo agitator, fighting for freedom of speech and catching trains to flashpoints in Washington, California, New Mexico, anywhere where Frank Little could stir things up. The U.S. entry into World War I in April 1917 raised the stakes. Patriotic hysteria swept the country. The Espionage Act virtually criminalized any opposition as treachery. IWW leaders opposed the war, but hesitated to say so publicly. Little, in contrast, by then a board member, branded it a capitalist slaughter fest for which no worker should die. When soldiers rounded up hundreds of striking Arizona mine workers in June 1917, an enraged Frank Little denounced the troops as scabs. Weeks later, Frank Little headed north to America's industrial crucible, Butte, Montana. The Montana town set on top of the richest hill on earth, a font of copper which drew tens of thousands of miners. It had been known as the Gibraltar of unionism, with powerful unions and a socialist mayor. But by 1917, the aptly named Anaconda Company, a global player, was crushing organized labor. It controlled the employment, newspapers, police stations, politicians, and for good measure, had a militia, said Gutfeld. In many respects, Montana at the time was a colony of the Anaconda Company. If you wanted to commit suicide, you went out against Anaconda Copper. A horrific accident in June 1917 killed 168 miners, infuriating survivors and giving the IWW, Little Hope, a chance to recruit. He arrived on the 18th of July. He was 38 years old and a physical wreck, thin, ill, a broken leg and a cast. Even so, he gave a barnstorming address to miners. Little spoke with maniacal fury and practically threatened the United States government with revolution. The pro-company Butte Miner newspaper reported, for 2 weeks, Little kept at it, urging miners to strike and fight the capitalists, but not the Germans. Newspapers demanded authorities crack down without gloves on such sedition and treasonable tirades. In retrospect, it was death foretold, but Little ignored warnings. Maybe he thought he could escape with just a beating. Maybe he knew what was coming. It would be better to go down slugging, he told his colleagues. There was one witness to the abduction besides Byrne, and there was no known witnesses to the lynching. A man called Robert Brown, on his way to work, found the body swinging from the trestle sometime after dawn. Pinned to his underwear was a placard. Others take notice. First and last warning, 3777. Rumors swirl to this day that Little was castrated, stabbed 27 times, lost his kneecaps from a drag whipping, that the numbers referred to his draft number or Montana's grave specifications, 3 feet wide, 7 feet deep, 77 inches long, that he was killed by Union rivals or a patriotic mob. The grisly details, said James Little Botkin, are exaggerations. He was savagely beaten and tortured, but didn't lose body parts and was likely unconscious when he was hanged. I believe they put him on top of the car and drove him out from underneath him. I believe they put him on top of the car and drove the car out from underneath him. He didn't struggle. He was strangled. The neck did not break. Little Botkin, more than anyone should know, the activist's great-grandniece, she spent 7 years combining official archives and plumbing family lore for a biography, Frank Little and the IWW, The Blood That Stained an American Family. The retired teacher believes the numbers referred to a warning to vagrants to buy a $3 train ticket for a 7 a.m. stagecoach, as ordered by purported secret committee of 77 men in Helena, Montana. Little Botkin and other historians agreed the killers most likely worked for Anaconda. The company had armed thugs, private detectives, and police officers on the payroll, but would explain why the official murder investigation went nowhere. There's literally a subplot. In his youth, Dashiell Hammett, who created the fictional detective Sam Spade, worked for the Pinkerton Detective Agency, who specialized in strike-breaking. Hammett's first novel, Red Harvest, concerns a labor dispute set in a thinly veiled version of Butte. In her memoirs, Lillian Hellman, Hammett's companion, and told her he was offered $5,000 to murder Frank Little. Through the years, he was to repeat the bribe offer so many times that I came to believe that it was kind of a key to his life. He had given a man the right to think he would commit murder. Some have speculated that the novelist actually did it. William Nolan, one of Hammett's biographers, thinks not. He didn't do it, but the fact that someone even asked him, thinking that he would be the kind of person and that he was that deep into the thing, made him feel guilty. He never got over it, and it always haunted him. Hammett subsequently became a communist and ended up on a McCarthy blacklist. Little's murder initially provoked flurries to defiance, but instead of galvanizing the movement, the lynching presaged a government crackdown. Federal troops in Butte, martial law in Spokane, the Federal Sedition Act of 1918, and the arrest of 165 alleged IWW members, all of its genius from improvising guerrilla tactics, noted the historian Robert Tyler. Members of Little's family were arrested, terrifying the family into decades of silence, said Little Botkin. If you had Frank's photo on you, that could be sedition. He had no photos of him, not one. The family just stopped talking about him. A movement which had mobilized the homeless and taught workers to take direct action never recovered, said Steed, the biographer. His death signaled the end of the only true radical and in some ways truly effective union of the time. Steed sees a continuum through the evolution and weakening of U.S. unions. Instead of a wide movement infusing white, black, and Latino workers with a shared class identity, unions narrowed and moderated their goals, seeking gains only for dues-paying members. Arguably, this was a sensible, successful tack which benefited members, but globalization and anti-union laws gradually drained their power. Only 1 in 10 American workers now belong to a union despite stagnant wages and widening inequality. Which brings us to Donald Trump. In the absence of powerful unions or a shared identity with the working poor and other races, blue-collar white men are Trump's strongest supporters. They feel angry and left out, so it's no surprise now that you have people willing to support someone who doesn't give a damn about them, says Steed. For C.W. Copeland, a Montana member of the IWW, which still limps on the fault lines not just with unions but also the Democratic Party and progressive academics. They neglected labor issues, he said. A lot of those going crazy for Donald Trump identifying more with their whiteness than their class. If more people knew about Frank Little, I think you have fewer voting for Trump. Perhaps, but Little's grave sits around yellowing grass and weeds in a lonely corner of the Mountain View Cemetery, drawing few pilgrims. Slain by capitalist interest for organizing and inspiring his fellow men, says the headstone. Cemetery signposts direct visitors to another grave, one adorned with flags and offerings. There rests Evel Knievel, the type of hero America remembers. This article...
Well, listeners, we're going to try again. You talk about a ragtag army. I'm your producer, and we have had a hell of a time getting the show started up. But I think we have, you know, and what a great reading, a clipping. Our host, Carl G., read there. I'm going to keep that. That's a keeper about Frank Little, I'm telling you. I can hear you. I can hear our brother, Carl G. He's messing around with his microphone. I can hear it. Carl, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Hey. Okay, so it's December 11th. We made it to December 11th. I mean, we're about to close this year out.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And, I mean, people, I'm on Twitter a lot, and, you know, people are just talking, saying, hey, let's just take the whole month off, people are saying. And,
why not?
So I know there's you know, since this fall, there's been at least 5 million people just walk off the jobs. And, you know, it's not worth it. It's too dangerous. If I come down with COVID, I'll never be able to make a nickel.
And they don't pay worth a shit, Carl. I mean, come on. 15 an hour is barely. I mean, come on, Carl. Do you agree or not?
Okay. Look at this. Look at the Amazon warehouse in Evansville, Illinois, that got plowed by an F5 tornado.
It killed I understand. They killed some workers, didn't it?
At least a half a dozen. Yeah, so we don't know. But, I mean, it's the middle, if you've seen this factory, the middle of it is it's just a concrete floor. And the debris field is 30,000 feet in the air. And this tornado ran 350 miles on the ground from Monette, Arkansas. It hit Mayfield, Kentucky, cut across the corner of Missouri, went up into Illinois, and hit the Amazon facility in Evanston. Or is it Evansville? I can't remember. I used to live close by there. And so Mayfield, Mayfield, Kentucky. I was looking at this place, and there's over 100 dead in Mayfield. Okay, so we got We got an organization that we support in Kentucky, and it's called Aspire Appalachia. So you can PayPal them at PayPal@AspireAppalachia.org, and then you just mention Tornado, and that's our closest on the ground connection. And what's going on is all these orgs, they meet at the fire station, they check at the fire station at Mayfield, and then they're bringing their own supplies, like, you know, they're Louisville is they're showing like gymnasiums full of stuff already to take in everything from water and blankets and batteries and flashlights and brooms, you know, things to clean up debris. And so some of the other organizations that are coordinating is the Western Kentucky Tornado Relief Fund, the Kentucky Red Cross, His House Ministries of Mayfield, Kentucky, United Way of Kentucky, Disaster Relief at Work, Convoy of Hope, Aspire Appalachia, Kentucky Baptist Disaster Relief, Shop Local Kentucky, the Lee Initiative, Mayfield Graves County United Way, Salvation Army Disaster Relief, Relevant Church, Mayfield, Kentucky, Rise and Shine of Bowling Green, Kentucky. I think Bowling Green was another town that got hit hard. Global Giving Midwest, U.S. Tornado Relief Fund. Blood donations are through the Kentucky Red Cross, Kentucky Blood Center. Donate clothes, blankets, toiletries, other supplies, gas generators, flashlights, headlamps, batteries, utility gloves, phone chargers, water, gas cans, socks, undergarments, blankets, coats, warm clothes, shoes, toiletries, paper towels, plastic utensils, paper plates, feminine hygiene products, baby formula, diapers, wipes, food that doesn't need to be cooked. Okay, so there's a water drive at the KFC Center on Sunday, Salvation Army, Kentucky-Tennessee Division, the Johnson Bar at 133 South 3rd Street in Paducah, Kentucky. Roebling Point Books at 601 Overton Street, Newport, Kentucky. Newport Fire Department, 998 Monomouth, St. Newport, Kentucky. Walnut Grove Baptist Church, 2941 Highland Lick Road, Russellville, Kentucky. Stepstone Family and Youth Services, 78 Khaki Drive, Benton, Kentucky. First Baptist Church on 2890 Broadway in Paducah, Kentucky. Marshall County Exceptional Center, 198 Old Somoza Road in Benton, Kentucky. Acreage Farm Supply, 724 Fairview Avenue, Eddyville, Kentucky. Cave City Community Center, it's a senior center, 105 Duke Street in Cave City, Kentucky. Northside Baptist Church, 611 West Lockridge Street of Mayfield, Kentucky. Dry Ground Brewing Company, 3121 Broadway in Paducah, Kentucky. Paducah Beer Works, 301 4th, Paducah, Kentucky. Louisville Donation Collection is at 1011 Carlisle Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Four Page Smokehouse and Bar, 1053 Goss Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Jamestown Park Batting Cages, 123 Park Avenue, Jamestown, Kentucky. Russell Springs City Hall, 487 Main Street, Russell Springs, Kentucky. Lone Oak Baptist Church in Lone Oak Road, Paducah, Kentucky. St. Jerome Catholic Church, Fancy Farm, Kentucky. Calvert City Center, 991 Fifth Avenue, Southeast Calvert City, Kentucky. Water Drive at Pritchard Community Center, 404 South Mulberry Street, Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Felix Martin Hall, 501 West Everly Brothers Boulevard, Greenville, Kentucky. Kentucky Education Development Corporation, Ashland office. 904 Rose Road, Lexington office is at 118 James Court. Anderson County Sheriff's Office, 208 South Main Street, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Winchester Police Department, 16 South Maple Street, Winchester, Kentucky. Georgetown Fire Department, 101 Jacob Drive, Georgetown, Kentucky. Six Forks Burger Company, 1039 Ash Street, Louisville, Kentucky. Clarksville Town Hall, 2000 Broadway Street, Clarksville, Indiana. Okay, food donations, Dare to Care Food Bank, Hope to All Food Pantry, Community Kitchen. This is Paducah, Drakesboro, Kentucky. Volunteers, if you could physically get there. Kentucky Emergency Management, Kentucky Red Cross, South Warren High School, 8140 Nashville Road, Bowling Green. Bremen Volunteer Fire Department, 51 College Street, Bremen, Kentucky. Catalyst Church, 114 Kings Drive, Mayfield, Kentucky. Bowling Green Community Action Center, 171 Center Street, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Gasper Brewing Company, 302 State Street, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Mayfield City Hall, 211 East Broadway, Mayfield, Kentucky. Volunteers needed with drills. Mayfield City Hall, okay. And it goes on. And I'm almost through, but anyway, Mike, are you still with me? Did I lose anybody?
No, you're broadcasting, brother. Get the word out. I'm tweeting and Facebooking as we talk, all right?
Yeah, this is something. I mean, early in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were saying there were 100 dead in Mayfield.
Dead.
Yeah. And this thing hit a nursing home.
Wait. That's one town. According to what I've picked up from the news, this thing, there was like 18 twisters that went through Kentucky or entered into Kentucky, and there was over a half dozen of towns hit that I heard on the news. I'm talking like about 10 hours ago. So this stuff is really breaking right now, isn't it? This news, this sounds like a catastrophe.
Yeah, this was a record storm. You know, we get these, you know, we always get 500 year floods about every 5 years.
Right.
And in the last 10 years, we've seen the Ohio River go dry, where river barges just laid there in the mud till the water came back up. We've seen the Arkansas River dry up. We've seen the Kansas River dry up. And so we're getting really radical weather conditions, and we've hardly had any frost. Here it is December, November. We hardly had any frost yet.
Oh, rain.
And
very little rain here in where I live in northeast Kansas.
Yeah, we've not hardly seen a drop of rain. Now, yeah, so, I mean, probably where we're at, we're a little bit better than where you're at, just a couple counties to the west. Because we're in the Great Lakes region on this side of the line, where Kansas is the Southern Prairie, which has more water than the Northern Prairie up in Nebraska. So
well,
we're this peculiar.
Yes and no, but really, honestly, I mean, there is a climactic problem, climactic chaos. But I mean, these casualties, people dying that you're reporting from your immediate. I mean, where do you get this contact information? I just twittered out that you were reading these. That's good. I'm glad you're doing that. But I mean, that's great. How did you get so many people that want to help or are helping on the ground in Kentucky? That's wonderful.
Okay. So this is 89.3 WFPL. Community Radio.
Uh-huh.
And the list I was reading off is from WFPL. So I think
Thank
that's
you.
Paducah.
Are they reporting these many casualties also? Because I haven't heard. I mean, it's like early this morning they were saying that they were expecting, you know, I think they said like 14, 24, something like that, dead. But they expected more. They said something like that it was, and they mentioned the Amazon warehouse. But they said workers were killed there, but they didn't say any numbers. So I mean,
well,
this is the news. This is.
Mayfield is leveled. I mean, Mayfield, there's no question Mayfield is leveled. I mean, they were, you know, there was a good warning because there's a bunch of storm chasers that run across Texas and Arkansas. And so they virtually kept that tornado in sight from Monette, Arkansas, up until Evansville, Illinois.
Well, and you know what? That's sort of sad that we learn about this from YouTube. That's why I watched some of those. I didn't see the live ones because I was asleep. But I mean, I'll put a shout out to one of my favorite storm watchers, Reed Timmer, T-I-M-M-E-R. He's very good at what he does on YouTube, and well, enough for that. But the point is that
Reed,
really happening.
Reed Kimmer's very good.
Well,
those dudes are amazing. Those dudes are amazing.
Yeah, they are.
Because they all know each other, and they'll hit a spot, and somebody will be directly under a funnel, and the other guy. There was one this year that they were all sides of a tornado, and one car was underneath the tornado.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
They know the nature of these storms so much. It's like a personal relationship with the weather. And I mean, I've seen Timmer all the way out to Colorado. He's up in Illinois. He's got a little dog. He's the one with the little dog, right? He's got a little dog that travels with him.
Well, yeah, and it's and his wife, and he'll have some. I mean, it's very interesting. He's very dedicated to his work, and I appreciated it. I appreciate it. He was this thing in Kentucky's got me so bowled over. I mean, these are serious numbers of dead people and wounded people. These are serious casualties. They really are. I mean, this is unlike anything I've seen in. This is unlike anything I've seen in years.
I'm looking around.
Go ahead.
No, I'm looking around for the prisons, and I'm trying to find out if any of the prisons got hit. So we know county jails have probably, you know, are.
Right.
And so, yeah, this is just people pulling together now. And it's just us. And, So just every little bit people can do, just even retweet and commenting, you know, and so you know, it was 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and Nashville, they were at 3:30 Central Time. It was heading, you know, right into Nashville, and then it kind of split up. And so, of course, you know, we have friends in Tennessee and Louisville and these areas, and so fortunately, my brother sold his house down there in Paducah, and so I call him, and he's in a hotel in Yuma, Arizona. So,
you know, when you run into people like that. You know, you ask him, well, you know, he has connections back there. Is he hurt? Was he hearing anything about how severe the weather was resulting for his neighbors? I mean, I don't know. I was just wondering, you know, I mean, he didn't know a lot of information. Sorry.
Well, yeah, we've been trying to, our best connection is we have a signal our signal app, and we have four or five in that area. But you know, they're spread out: Louisville, Central Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee, Nashville. So we have one or two people in that particular area. You know, because you know, like Eastern Kentucky State University is a very, very active with environmental issues and things like that. And so it's more, it's actually more remote when you start getting into Southern Illinois, because you know there's the Shawnee National Forest there in Southern
right.
Illinois. Kentucky Lake.
Southern Illinois is a lot like Kansas. I remember I've been there a little bit, you know, for Southern Illinois University, and it reminded me of the plains in a way, you know, hills and flats. But, you know, so these twisters also went into the Southern Illinois. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, they seemed, you know, just my knowledge of the nature of these storms. And of course, I'm not a meteorologist, that, you know, or anything like that. But you know, so a lot of these apps and stuff that you get now, you can see debris flying through the air with some of this radar. And you know, there was a house that was hit in Lawrence, Kansas, and the debris ended up at Kansas City International Airport.
Last night?
Well, no. I'm just saying, as effective as this radar. No. This stuff is like 30,000 feet. I can send that. We can put it on our site. But there's a radar image of this stuff, just flying from Arkansas across Missouri. I mean, this stuff just stayed in the air. I mean, no telling what stuff they'll find. I mean, most of it's just like splintered 2x4s and stuff, you know. And but yeah, there's a photograph of over Mayfield, and it's over 30,000 feet. The debris field is 30,000 feet in the air. So what is that, 6-7 miles in the air?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. So you know, they were showing pictures of this. It was like a tempest, and any of the folks out in Kansas were looking to the southwest last night. The sky was pink, and then to the north, there was a front coming through, and so just even. I mean, it looked like time lapse photography. There were, and some of these spots, these tornadoes spot trackers, they were on these hills, you know, looking towards, you know, Oklahoma, and the clouds were just rumbling, you know, with over to the side of this pink sunset, and they said, I mean, they were saying, here it comes, and. Yeah, so it was about 12:20, 12:15, I think, when the nursing home in Monette, Arkansas, got hit. And
what a terrible time. I mean, there was a headline. This is the world of the internet, and it said nocturnal tornadoes in the southeast part of the country. That was the headline, and I thought that is, you know, and I moved on. You know, I don't think people, I know I didn't absorb the true amount of misery that was about to unfold in Kentucky and Southern Illinois. That's terrible. Well, you know, maybe we should take a musical break. I'll put on some Pete Seeger, and you should probably read those contact addresses. At least, you know, again, because we need to get people, you know, people need to know about this, don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
I think that's, man, terrible. Yeah, really. We'll be right back.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
It is we who plow the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of Adam, magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Mighty cities, mid the roar of whirling wheels, we are toiling on like chattel slaves of old. And our masters hope to keep us ever thus beneath their heels, and to coin our very lifeblood into gold.
But we have a glowing dream of how fair the world will seem when each man can live his life secure and free. When the earth is owned by labor and there's joy and peace for all in the commonwealth of toil that is to be.
They would keep us cowed and beaten, cringing meekly at their feet. They would stand between each worker and his bread. Shall we yield our lives up to them for the bitter crust we eat? Shall we only hope for heaven when we're dead?
But we have a glowing dream of how fair the world will seem when each man can live his life secure and free. When the earth is owned by labor and there's joy and peace for all in the commonwealth of toil that is to be.
They have laid our lives out for us to the utter end of time. Shall we stagger on beneath their heavy load? Shall we let them live forever in their gilded halls of crime, with our children doomed to toil beneath their gold?
But we have a glowing dream of how fair the world will seem when each man can live his life secure and free. When the earth is owned by labor and there's joy and peace for all in the commonwealth of toil that is due.
when our cause is all triumphant and we claim our Mother Earth and the nightmare of the present fades away. We shall live with love and laughter, men who now are little worth, and will not regret the price we have to pay. But we have a glowing dream of how fair the world will seem when each man can live his life secure and free. When the earth is owned by labor and there's joy and peace for all in the commonwealth of toil that is to be.
Okay, we're back again live, and you can call us at 646-716-8652. And reach us and be sure and put your hand up now. There are a couple lines on right now. I see your numbers on the switchboard, but if you want to visit, you need to push 1, and that will put a little flag up and say, hey, put me on air, and I'll try to do that as soon as possible. Again, the phone number to call in, if you're listening on your computer, is area code 646-716-52, and Carl's on the air, and we're going to review some of this vitally important contact information for people in Kentucky, and so that, you know, where people have got really hit with this horrible, I don't know what you'd call it, a tidal wave of tornadoes. I mean, it was, I mean, amazing, nocturnal tornadoes, tornadoes that hit at night, killed workers at Amazon, evidently, and workers all throughout Kentucky. Carl, are you there? Can you?
Yeah. So, yeah, it just ripped through the southern Midwest, starting in Arkansas, crossed the Boot Hill in Missouri, went into Kentucky and Illinois and Indiana, and moved up the Ohio River and up towards the Great Lake. It was massive. It was massive. The one that hit Bowling Green and Mayfield, Kentucky, was a half a mile wide, and they were calling 200 mile an hour winds at 10:30 last night in Arkansas. So that's like, you know, that's like an F5 tornado when a funnel, you know, hits the ground. So the University of Kentucky College of Medicine has a Kentucky Tornado Relief Fund, and organized by Abigail Rawls, and that's at, if you go to GoFundMe, it's UKCOM Student Effort for Tornado Relief in Kentucky. And so far, in 9 hours, they've raised almost $33,000. And so we'll go back to the other list of at 89.3 WFPL Community Radio. And you can probably get a lot of real-time interviews starting soon. So Western Kentucky Tornado Relief Fund, there's the Red Cross, and, of course, Aspire Appalachia is the group that we are working with. And that would be PayPal, aspireappalachia.org. And then mention tornado is so they know it's for tornado relief. And so it's really interesting to see all these groups work together. So there's His House Ministries in Mayfield, Kentucky, United Way of Kentucky, Disaster Relief at Work, Convoy of Hope, Fire Appalachia, Kentucky Baptist Disaster Relief, Shop Local Kentucky, the Lee Initiative, Mayfield Graves County United Way, Salvation Army Disaster Relief, Relevant Church Mayfield, Kentucky, Rise and Shine Bowling Green, Global Giving Midwest U.S. Tornado Relief Fund, donate blood at 2 locations, Kentucky Red Cross. You can find your local blood bank on this link. There's a Kentucky Blood Center. They need clothes. They need batteries, lamps, utility gloves, gas generators, gas for generators, flashlights, headlamps. And there's so find out what if you can bring supplies, contact one of these points of where they're picking up. So if you're to the east, you can drop off in Louisville, or so we've not listed any St. Louis areas at this time. Maybe we can find this later on. But right in Kentucky, the Johnson Bar at 133. South 3rd Street, Paducah, Kentucky, Salvation Army, Water Drive at the KFC in Mayfield, Rolling Point Books at Overton Street in Newport, Kentucky, Newport Fire Department, Walnut Grove Baptist Church in Russellville, Kentucky, Stepstone Family Youth Services in Benton, Kentucky. Stepstone Family Youth Services, I said that, First Baptist Church in Paducah, Kentucky, that would be at 2890 Broadway. Marshall County Exceptional Center in Benton, Kentucky. Ackridge Farm Supply in Eddyville, Kentucky. Cave City Community Center in Cave City, Kentucky. Northside Baptist Church, Lockridge in Mayfield, Kentucky. Dry Ground Brewing in Paducah, Kentucky. Paducah Beer Works in Paducah, Kentucky. Louisville Donation Collection is at 1011 Carlisle Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Four Peg Smokehouse in Louisville. Jamestown City Park Batting Cages, Jamestown, Kentucky. Russell Springs City Hall is at 487 Main Street, Russell Springs, Kentucky. Lone Oak Baptist Church, 3601 Lone Oak Road, Paducah, Kentucky. St. Jerome Catholic Church in Fancy Farm, Kentucky. Calvert City Civic Center in Calvert City, Kentucky. There's a Water Drive at Elizabethtown, Kentucky, 404 South Mulberry Street, Elizabethtown. Felix Martin Hall in Greenville, Kentucky. Kentucky Education Development Corporation, Ashland Office, 904 Rose Road, Lexington Office, 118 James Court in Lexington. Anderson County Sheriff's Office in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Winchester Police Department in Winchester, Kentucky. Georgetown Fire Department, 101 Jacobs Drive, Georgetown, Kentucky. Six Flags Burger Company in Louisville, Kentucky. Clarksville Town Hall, 2000 Broadway Street, Clarksville, Indiana. Dare to Care Food Bank, Hope to All Food Pantry, Drakesboro, Kentucky. Community Kitchen, 1237 Martin Luther King Drive, Paducah, Kentucky. Volunteers needed at Kentucky Emergency Management, Kentucky Red Cross, South Warren High School, 8140 Nashville Road, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Bremen Fire Department in Bremen, Kentucky. Catalyst Church, Mayfield, Kentucky. Bowling Green Community Action Center, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Gasper Brewing Company in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Mayfield City Hall, volunteers needed with drills. Kentucky Voluntary Organization active in disaster. God's Pit Crew, Tim Rubicon, Team Rubicon, disaster response. The Humane Society, Animal Rescue, Kentucky Humane Society. Foster a pet, donate supplies. The following shelters are in critical need due to the tornado. Mayfield Graves County Animal Shelter, Bowling Green Warren County Humane Society. Sigliski Animal Clinic at 5401 Blandville Road, Paducah, Kentucky. Phone number is 270-554-0171. Offering free housing for displaced pets. River Retriever Kennels at 5796 Old Mayfield Road, Paducah, Kentucky. Phone number is 270-556-4433. Offering housing for displaced pets. Okay, refer community members in distress to these helplines. SMHSA, call or text 1-800-985-5990. Report price gouging. It's illegal for retailers to bump up the prices of certain things during an emergency. If you see this happening, you can report online or call 1-888-432-9257 per the Kentucky Attorney General's office. Okay, and that's pretty much the list again, folks. And we've spent an hour talking about the disaster relief and folks mobilizing. And Mike, are you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. Hell yeah. This is critical information, really. I mean, I'm really so glad that we're doing the show tonight. We pulled it off. Somehow we pulled off the show, and I'm really glad. Let's take a little break, and we'll be back with we've got a clip, Carl, right, about some news and stuff. And
we're going to do some local news about cash bond.
Okay, man. All right, here we go. Hold on, and we'll be back in a while.
Thank you. what are you going? Tori Bangbo now, me lera reo. It's your head, the hot, the water kukulam. Toma bandagba, oh, me loma lo. If your child, they grow, the water can go in. If water kill your child, the water you go in.
Okay.
This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm Carl G. This is from KansasCityDefender.com. Kansas City's cash bail system is destroying black wealth. December 6, 2021 by Amia Cook, Dylan Piles, and Black Rainbow. In 2020, Jackson County Justice System announced plans to build a new mass caging facility. The reason the existing facility has deteriorated into living hell is because Kansas City Police Department continues to wage its decade-long war against black, brown, and low-income people. To make matters worse, the majority of these detained at the Jackson County Detention Center have committed no crime. They are being held pre-trial, which means they are being held in jail because they are unable to pay the bail required for their release. The current detention facility is infamous for its nightmarish conditions, which violate human rights laws. It's not unusual to see help signs pressed against the outside-facing windows of the building. Despite the horrific upkeep of the building, the violent abuse of its people who are imprisoned, the county predicted that its total jail population will increase 32% by 2050. Building a new facility is based on the assumption that the jail populations will surge over the next 30 years, as will the demand for their services. This misleading propaganda is produced by the JCDC Partners, a private group of developers who profit from jails constructions and others, mostly rich white people, who benefit from the imprisonment of black people. To be clear, jail populations have nothing to do with public safety. If safety was a priority, the same money being used to cage people would instead be for mental health services, housing, transition services to assist people in leaving jails, not having nice cages to live in. What we are proposing and what black people have demanded for decades is for our jail populations to decrease, for our focus to be on releasing people and transitioning people out of jails. This would be a far more impactful way to invest our money, especially given to the vast majority of people that are in jail that are there because they cannot afford to pay bail. This is the Abolitionist Hour. I'm Carl G.
Man, that's
all right.
Good stuff. Go ahead,
hey,
Carl. So
this is Black Rainbow. They're really an awesome group that sprung up about 3 or 4 years ago. And just really talented, some really talented folks, and they're with the black LGBTQ community, and so they're Black Rainbow, it's enlightening to find out about these folks on the ground and reporting just literally just wearing their shoes off, and that's really all that activism is just keeping on it and people, you know, showing up when they say they're going to show up and we're just in a different time. It's not a romantic period that we're in. So it's not a time for a lot of artists and musicians to really break out. It's a turning point, you know, just like this storm in Kentucky. You know, when's it going to, Kansas City,
right.
You know, they're saying can be Kansas City Metro, they're saying it's anywhere between 2 million to 4 million people. So, what's going to be another 5 years before we find out actually how many people are moving into the Metro? I mean, are they going to expand
uh-huh.
it? Because right now the Metro is 6 counties, but maybe we need to include, you know, Jefferson County, Kansas, the counties outside of that ring, you know, not just the commuter distance, you know, the way the weather is right now, I mean, we can, it's somewhat, it's not predictable. I mean, we can see where it was going. It's okay. This is headed, you know, across the Arkansas River and the Red River and that southern weather cell, you know, and the patterns have been hitting Arkansas and Tennessee more than tornadoes have been dropping in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So
right.
We're seeing spring. What is spring coming? At least maybe 3 weeks early now. You know, so there's just all types of uh, all types of anomalies that we have to adjust to. And what is civil defense? What's going on in Kentucky is pretty much telling us what civil defense is. It's people pulling together and really coordinating, getting trucks in and loading and keeping track of this stuff and emails and voicemails and then we have groups that are getting the ham radio situation together because from the distance, I mean, we go ahead.
Well, I was wondering, your tape clip was dealing with the rainbow people. What are they doing? What's going on that they're doing right now? That is, we're sort of getting off the subject a little bit, but I mean, what was that? That was about bail bonds or what? What was it? The rainbow?
Yeah, well, it's about cash bail. It's so here we're dealing with this emergency situation here, and then we got the state, saying, hey, brown people, it's an emergency pit. Brown people, we don't want to see brown people on the street, so let's just lock them up. We don't want to create jobs. We don't want to build infrastructure. So we're just going to be bankers. We're going to be like real estate brokers. And then everybody else is just in our way. We want to sell luxury apartments to people in Europe, in the Middle East, and they can come once a year and spend some on some tourist dollars, and have some have some drinks, and see a show, go to the symphony. And so I mean, that's the thing. And he's it's like we're always there's no billionaires or there's no billionaires living in Kansas City. Then when somebody dies, it's like wait a minute, this guy made his fortune in Kansas City. Who cares if he lives in San Diego or Kennebunkport, Maine? We don't care where his mail drop is, but you just go to the airport. And it's, you see people getting on planes that maybe they got a clipboard in their hand and an ink pen.
Right.
There's people coming in out of Kansas City not even packing a toothbrush.
Well, I got this theory, Carl, and I hope the listeners will indulge us and let me talk a little bit about this thing of Kansas City. Because right now in Jefferson County, which is really 60 miles from Kansas City, most of the working class people that work and have, really some good jobs, really, they commute that 60 miles either to Kansas City or Topeka or south into Lawrence. Almost every working class family I know in Jefferson County, that's their source of income, is the metropolitan cores of generally Douglas and Wyandotte, Lawrence, Kansas City, and Topeka. And that's where those people, they drive. Now, I'm fortunate, I'm old, so I'm using what time I have to plead their cause. But for the life of me, I can't help but laugh many times, not about these people that are working, but their parents, because so many of the young people grow older and then they move away as soon as they get out of high school. Many of them are are viewed as the real casualties out here. They're the young people that have to leave because there's no real jobs out here. And they go, and inevitably once they start to get married and have kids, they come back out here, and they still face the same problem. There are no real jobs out here, the small capitalists, the merchants, and the retail people, they do the best they can, but they can't really provide any jobs with health benefits or pensions or anything like that. And it's like, you know, I sort of look at it here in Jefferson County, like, hell, we should all be in one union, you know, even the capitalists, even the little merchants, you know, we should all get in some sort of cooperative, because business, I mean, it's constant, the drive among the wealthier people in our county to bulldoze more hedgerows and plow under every little bit of land and to get involved in real estate deals and speculation. They're really inevitably just driving us out, driving the littler people who don't own a lot of land out of these areas. And it's been going on for 20 years. I've been here 20 years, and I've seen it. I've seen the young people leave, and, you know, 20 years later they come back, but, you know, they don't have anything. They have to commute into the urban areas. I don't consider the urban areas enemies. As a matter of fact, I consider them places where it's good, really. A lot of the young people that come back are smarter and more, they're less racist. They are they're more cosmopolitan. I don't know the word, but they come back and they're I think they overall serve a positive influence in the communities, but in the villages. But honestly, this is a contradiction between the country or the rural people and the cosmopolitans or the people who live in the urban cores. This is a contradiction that has been among people since the goddamn Middle Ages, you know. And I think that's being reconciled as we speak, because I see a lot of similarities. Now, to be honest with you, speaking to you who live in the urban cores in the metropolitan areas, this assimilation where people are out of economic necessity forced to live together is the positive influence that happens out here. But I don't see that changing yet in this area. I mean, we're still probably 85% Caucasoid, as they call it, you know. And so my brothers in the Native American community, we're probably still 85 to 90% Caucasoid, and there is this it's sort of a sleepy village type situation in this whole county, 449 square miles, and it's smack dab in the hub. It's a hub for Kansas City, Kansas, Leavenworth, Lawrence, Topeka. I mean, everybody I know who has a job. It's not even really that serious, but you know, I think that's a bridge that your show offers people out here to listen to, and I hope more and more people. I'm going to make a big effort to get more and more people in the rural areas to listen to your show, because I think it's really important for us to understand. That's one of the big things that characteristics that come out of your show is the people that call in, like who is Lamar and Lulu. These people, their voices need to be heard out here, because about the homeless and the prisoners, it's something vitally important for them. And I know there are people out here who have children who have moved away, they've grown up and moved away, and they've fallen into or whatever. They get arrested or they get in trouble, and it really is. It's just something that I think it's important for people in Jefferson County. We're your neighbers. We're right out here. And when go ahead. I mean, I just, you know, I just want
no,
to say,
that, no, it's a good point. One thing I noticed, like in Appalachia, you know, in the Ozarks, the old timers say, well, everybody's either dead or in prison.
Right.
I mean, you know, so there's like, you know, 2,000 miles in one direction. That's like a common expression now. And you know, so this group that we have, if our listeners are on Twitter, our group that we're connected with is called Hood to the Holler. And so that would be a Twitter. That would be at Hood to the Holler. And they will be giving updates on the disaster relief as we go through this process. And so that's PayPal at aspireappalachia.org is their PayPal. You can contact them at P.O. Box 1255, Jackson, Kentucky, 41339, and just, you know, indicate tornado relief. And so this is how we're operating. And you know, we've met people, you know, before COVID. You know, we've not been down in Kentucky and Tennessee, you know, for a couple, almost 2 years now as a result of COVID. But we established these relationships, and we're fortunate enough that we're actually able to do a Southern speaking tour in the spring, where we take off and we hit places like Knoxville or Nashville. We hit Huntsville, Alabama, Atlanta, Georgia. We get down to Gainesville, Florida. We get up to Raleigh, North Carolina. And we get up to the Washington, D.C. area. And so you know, we hear stories all over where folks from the country are moving into the cities. And that's the one thing about like the IWW and IWOC is there are people from the cities and there's people from the countryside, and they're working together, and it's a shared experience. And we really love the South. I mean, it's just for us, it's just really it's just a great experience to be out in the history. And the people are just great out in these areas, and so it's nice to spend 3 or 4 days with a group of people, you know, and some of them you've met before, and you know, you're meeting new people, and they've been working hard. They've been working hard to bridge this rural urban divide, which through identity politics has divided folks for so long. And I feel we're making some ground. I mean, it's been decades in the making. And go ahead.
It goes way back. I mean, it goes back to a long ways. I mean, we're talking 400 or 500 years where these contradictions between the rural and the so-called the villages. I mean, it goes way back. I mean, hey, I want to play one of my favorite clips that you provided, you and Lamar, and a little music. And I really want you to listen to this. I think there's a lot to this about this. And on my playlist, it's called The Pledge. And it's very interesting clip. Made up by Carl and Lamar.
The Pledge of Allegiance by Utah Phillips. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the multinational corporations and to the profit for which they stand, one interlocking directorate under no government, indivisible, with monopoly and cheap labor for all.
We march in formation, lockstep, in cadence, so that their bodies don't betray their fear by jerky, hesitant motions. Head straight, on order, by order so that the folder cannot confirm under certain eyes. They make noises. Hut two to think. Hut two and whatever they are told instead of possible death. And they think of dying anyway, even though they are used to thinking whatever they are told. And they think they should be honored for this. And they shall be increasingly with grenades, lockstep. Kwasi Balagoon, December 22nd, 1946, December 13th, 1986, Black Panther, member of the BLA, New African Anarchist.
Yeah, so that's Kwasi
had a job in 29. When everything was going fine, knew the pace was pretty fast, but thought that it would always last. When organizers came to town, I'd always sneer, turn them down. I thought the boss was my best friend, he'd stick by me to the end. Ta-ra-ra, boom, the A, ain't got a word to say. He chiseled down my pay, then took my job away. Boom went the boom one day, it made a noise that way. I wish I had been wise, next time I'll organize. I had a little bank account, not very much, a small amount, which to the savings bank I took. All they gave me was a book. I pinched on food, scraped on rent, hardly ever spent a cent. My little savings grew and grew, I thought I'd be a big shot too. Ta-ra-ra, boom, yeah, it made a noise that way. There went my hard-earned pay, save for a rainy day. Oh, what a dirty trick, this soup line makes me sick. Where can that banker be? He's eating soup with me. And finally it came to pass, all I had to eat was grass. The wolf don't bother anymore, he starved to death right by my door. With soup and gas and club and gun, they tried to make the system run. They said, dear friends, now don't get sore, we'll make it like it was before. Ta-ra-ra, boom, dee, it busted up one day. Those guys that stole my pay went flying every way. All that I've got to say, I hope they've gone to stay. Each dog must have his day. Ta-ra-ra, boom, dee.
I had to play. I had to interrupt Carl. I am the quote executive producer, and I decided to just run over boss Carl G, our host. I'm sorry, Carl. I think in CB, in the CB world, I walked over you. I just put it on. I'm sorry, Carl.
Well, no, it's an improv show. And so hopefully our audience is thinking, what the hell is going to happen next?
Well, I'm not so sure myself what's going to happen next. I'm not sure what will happen next, Carl. But that's funny. Well, you know, I was thinking when I was listening to you talk, I thought about that. That's Leon Glazier. By the way, he's a official IWW guy. I don't know much about him, but I mean, do you know anything about him? Leon Glazier. I don't know anything about the guy. But
I'm trying to think of what was the name of the song, because I've got the Little Red Songbook right in front of me.
It's just called Boom Da Boom. As in a bomb.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. I think it's And he didn't know the song called Workers Unite, that which might be in the Red Book, you know.
Yeah, and some of these are in the Sing Out catalog. There's a companion to the Little Red Book. There's about 10,000 folk songs that are copyright free, and they made them public domain so that there would be singing. There would be songs to sing in the future, and Walmart or Disney not own everything.
Right. I mean, that's what gets me about anarchist music, and I'm all for that. I think, you know, I try to give credit to everybody who, Utah Phillips or Leon Glazier. And there's another one here I got, Leon Rosselson. I don't know how to pronounce his name. And it's supposed to be a IWW song. I mean, there's hundreds of these things out there floating around on the internet, and I pick them up and I look at the lot. You know, my God, do you believe how the copyright people? I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, how the trolls are out there, listeners. I once got a call, an email, saying on my YouTube channel I have, I never use it, that I uploaded one program, and inside that program was a short 2-minute clip from The Clash. You all remember the rock and roll group, The Clash, and I even have them now. But the network let me play them. But when I played them out and put them on YouTube, some character in New Zealand, now which is supposed to be the paradise where we're all supposed to go to if we have any money to hide from doomsday, some character in New Zealand put a copyright complaint on me over The Clash, because it was just one song in 2 hours of programming. And I was like, what the hell? And I didn't even know anyone in New Zealand listened to Radio Free Kansas. But I'm like, you know, I got in trouble with YouTube over that. Now, can you figure that shit out, Carl? Carl, I mean, come on. How ridiculous does it have to be? Do you know anything about The Clash? I mean, Joe Strummer, probably the biggest punk rock guy in the world, he would probably spit on that guy in New Zealand. I mean, honestly,
go ahead. Most people around, they were with CBS. They were with the CBS label. A lot of people might recognize them with Joe Ely out of Austin and the Flatlanders. There were some major sessions that they did down in Austin, the Clash did. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about influential composers of the 20th century, you know, you're looking at Joe Hill and Woody Guthrie, and the ones with the longevity.
Well, you said
it's down to three or four people, and Joe Strummer's one of them.
Do you think these artists, these performers, would be upset that I'm playing their songs with credit attribution? And do you think really, I mean, this is all about copyright. Am I right or wrong? I mean, somebody owns
it. That's right. So, I mean, the main, and that's the thing is people can be petty. People can be petty. So just using a phrase over like 2 seconds or something can get you tagged. But what we're seeing in street actions is when you have someone that's very very right wing or something like this, and people will show up and they'll play Taylor Swift. And so that bleeds into their audio, to the speaker's audio, and that gets taken down on on YouTube because Taylor Swift is playing in the background. So when you got Sony,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's actually a psyops thing also. Yeah. Now the other thing is like rappers. It's not uncommon in the last 20 years for a prosecution to get a conviction on a rap song. Somebody releases an album, and they're saying, oh, this describes exactly, this coincides with the evidence that we've collected at this crime scene.
Fucking dick, man. Unbelievable.
So, yeah, that's what I tell people. It's like, take these old folk songs and write your rap lines and stuff off these old folk songs and say, oh, no, this is about Stagger Lee.
Right, yeah.
You know, Tarala Boumdie. I mean, that's a... You know, that song's deep. we don't have time.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm laughing. I'll mute my mic. But I'm
No, that's good. No, that's good because we're just kind of talking, and hopefully we're entertaining some folks out there in Blog Talk land. And
well,
so yeah, but no, these copyright issues.
Yeah, there's five numbers on the switchboard, listeners. I know five of you are listening right now live. You could push one, and you could talk with Carl G. Or what, Carl G.? I would rather you talk to him than me. And just push one. And if you're listening on your home computer, we've got 15 minutes. Area code 646-716-8652. And I got to do this. If you want to contact Carl G. At the Kansas City IWOC, that's IWOC, KCIWOC, write him at P.O. Box 414-304, Kansas City, Missouri, zip code 64141. Excuse me. Again, that's KCIWOC, KCIWOC, P.O. Box 414-304, at Kansas City, Missouri, zip code 64141. So it's one of I'm really happy to produce this show because it's really become I go to the grocery store and I go to the post office out here in the rural areas, you know, and I get every once in a while a comment. Woman at the produce runs the produce section in Valley Falls, her name's Janice, she listens. She doesn't listen to all the shows, but she picked up at this abolitionist hour that Carl G. Creates with my help, and I'm not very good at it, every Saturday evening. Janice at the produce aisle, she is a produce manager, by the way. Unfortunately, manager is meaningless. She's the worker. She's the one that cuts the bags up the celery and stuff. She said, Mike, she's probably 55, maybe 50. I don't want to say. She said, Mike, I listen to the Abolitionist Hour. It's very interesting programming. I said, well, I'm laughing. I said, well, yes. And she goes, I think that's interesting because I'm a Republican. And then she went, she sort of choked up. She said, well, my husband is still a Republican. And I think it's interesting that you're trying this out on Saturday night. I said, well, I mean, you got to. And she said, we don't go anywhere on Saturday night like we used to. So I put this on my laptop and play it, and my husband listens. And I said, well, I hope it helps. And she says, oh, it does. It helps me immensely. That's what she said. So I really like the Abolitionist Hour. I really do. I think it's one of the listeners, we have a lot of technical problems. I'm competing with the water tower in Winchester for bandwidth and trying to get Carl's voice out here, and it works out most of the time. So I'm sorry if you're having trouble. Usually it's all at the beginning of the show. But well, Carl, we've got 11 minutes. What would you like to talk about? And I insist on playing a song by a guy in Kansas City who used to live in Kansas City. His name's Jim Herman, and he had a band called the Herminators. And there's a really good song I want to play in the best spirit of the Clash. And where do you think we're going now here in Kansas City with your help for the homeless and all these this work? What are you doing down there? I mean, it's tough times.
Well, okay, so now there is a dashboard that you can contact in Kansas City to find out how many beds are available in Kansas City. So here's the thing, is like it's like, oh, once the weather gets 20 below, okay, so everybody in Kansas wants to die with their boots on, right? So everybody knows it's like 15 minutes, your body at 60 degrees for 15 minutes, you've escaped the mortal coil. Okay?
Some of these fucking characters out here watch Gunsmoke, and they actually believe that shit. But the people do freeze to death. I agree, but I'm just flipping shit at the locals who listen to the show. Not you, Janice. Not you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Carl.
Well, there's groups right now. They've come up with a little alcohol lamp. And they take a piece of tubing from an old refrigerator, a copper tubing, and so they'll take about a 12-inch piece and they'll put it into a small bell jar, and they'll burn alcohol. And so they'll put a little loop, and then they cut a couple holes in the bell jar lid, and then they'll take the JB Weld, and they'll seal it airtight, and then they put a couple wicks on the ends of the copper tubing inside where the alcohol is, and then they drill a real fine hole where the tubing has looped, and so the heat actually causes the alcohol to rise through the tube and just burns this one little flame that's about 2 or 3 inches tall, and then they put a piece of wire mesh around it, and they set a terracotta pipe on top of that alcohol burner, and then that heats the terracotta, and then you use the lid for the terracotta pot to set the alcohol burner on, and you can heat a tent or you can heat a car with one of these, and it's relatively safe. And of course, people out in Kansas probably still keep candles in their glove box. Because if you're stalled out in the middle of a storm, one candle can keep you from freezing to death. So this is the kind of situation that we're working with, So we're building tents on pallets where we can get pallets for next to nothing. So we'll build a tent on a pallet so that the water will flow under if it's a storm. And then we'll insulate the floor with cardboard or preferably plywood. Put a wood floor in, and so maybe actually have a corner of the tent with one of these little alcohol lamps, and so it's actually setting on brick on the ground, so that if it does fall over, it just goes out basically like a hurricane lamp.
Right.
And so you got to keep a certain amount of oxygen in your tent, and so this alcohol works really good. And you can use sanitizer; you can burn sanitizer in these lamps. So it's just over.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah, yeah. So rubbing alcohol or sanitizer. And so it's safe. What burns off of it is like I don't know what burns off of is it water, H2O or something? But it's so you can vent in very cold weather. You know, so a tent basically is a sheet of plastic, and then like a packing blanket, and then another plastic sheet over that, and then you use your tarps, and then you anchor that to the ground. And so, see, you can, you know, like winds, when there's 200-mile-an-hour wind, you know, you don't want a tent much more than 4 or 5 feet in the air, otherwise it gets knocked down. This stuff we see down here at Smithville Lake or over there in Jefferson County, those tents are not made to withstand much more than a 30 mile per hour wind. And so you know, we're working. I got a guy I'm working with now. He lost all his toenails from frostbite last January. He spent 4 or 5 months in a wheelchair, so he's still recovering. You know, and these guys that we're working with, you know, whether they just got out of prison or they just got out of prison and they've been homeless for years, it's like you guys got to build back up, you know, and like the Carpenters Union here. You know, it's your first year to see if you're tough enough to do the apprenticeship. And so the apprenticeship is technically a 2-year program for the Carpenters Union. Now, that's about $14 an hour, but after they get their apprenticeship, and here's another trick, is it's right to work, right? So you got people that are like the union say, hey, it's right to work. You don't have to join the union. But you don't get any certification after a 2-year program. After the apprenticeship, if you don't sign on,
that's bullshit.
Yeah,
bullshit.
Right
hey,
to work
hey,
is bullshit.
Hey, we only got about 4 minutes. Hey, what do you think of this Starbucks thing developing? They had a union. I guess they voted a union in somewhere. New York,
Buffalo, New York. Okay, so Buffalo, New York, uh-huh. So there's five Starbucks, and so there's three that have gone union, and the Labor Relations Board has recognized them as a union, and so they're setting their own schedules, they're scheduling pay raises, and so there's two others. There's one at the airport, and there's another one in Buffalo that the LRB is looking at it close to make sure, because when you talk about union busting, Walmart runs the union busting operation. They recruited out of the CIA. So, you know, when you look at like National Fruit, you know, the banana plantations in Central America, where they just went through and just killed every labor organizer from Panama to Mexico City, and they divided Central America up from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and the coffee plantations got the Pacific, and the banana plantations got the Atlantic. And you either ride on the train or you ride under the train.
Yeah.
And if you ever go, ever been through Central, go ahead.
Which way is Starbucks going, you think? It's supposed to be
this is a major win. This was an 11-year fight. In fact, when you talk about copyright, there's a song in the Little Red Songbook. What are we going to do with the Starbucks bosses? You can't use Starbucks. It's copywritten. You can't find the lyrics unless you buy the book from the IWW.org. You can't Libcom. Yeah. So that's how locked down Starbucks and Walmart has this labor situation. And you go back and look at United Fruit in the 1950s. And the coffee plantations are French and German. People wonder, it's like, wow, how did German phrases make it into the most indigenous regions of Central America? That's because the plantations are all over the place.
I'm telling you, we're gonna have to go, and it's something to think about, listeners.
You're a Grand Old Rag, sung by Billy Murray, Edison Records. The feeling comes a stealing, and it sets my brain a reeling when I'm listening to the music of a military band. Any tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand. Way down south in the land of cotton, melody untiring, ain't that inspiring? Hurrah, hurrah, we'll join the jubilee, and that's going some for the Yankees by gum. Red, white, and blue, I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old rag. You're a grand old rag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old...